Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org. Yet another term enters our lexicon, cancel culture. You see it every day. Someone is outed, they're doxed, all these other terms that we come up with to explain the online social media phenomenon that is essentially a mixture of virtue signaling and what our guest for the next few minutes of the program calls righteousness envy. And the latest victim is a young man who raised a lot of money over the internet, gave it away to a children's hospital, and then, inevitably, one of his old tweets from when he was 16 years old was found and published in the Des Moines Register. We're going to be talking about that story. Pastor Hans Feeney joins us. He's pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois. He's creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire. He's senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column titled Carson King Doesn't Need Our Forgiveness, but the Des Moines Register owes him an apology. Hans, welcome back.
Good to be back.
Tell us this story about Carson King and the editors and reporters at the Des Moines Register.
So Carson King is a 24-year-old fella who's an alumnus of Iowa State. And recently, College Game Day, which is a show on ESPN that they have prior to the college football games of the weekend, they go out to various places, and it's a pretty common thing for the people who are gathering their students and fans of the team to have rather ridiculous and absurd signs. So Carson King made up a sign that read, Bush Light Supply Needs Replenished, and he had information where people could Venmo him money. They could send him money electronically. And what ended up happening was that a bunch of people started sending him in money so much that he realized that he should actually probably do something notable and charitable with it. So he decided to donate all of the money that he received to a nearby children's hospital that treats kids with all sorts of sicknesses, diseases, ailments, and whatnot. So the story was picked up by the media. He ended up getting a ton of money and promises and matching funds, both from Venmo as well as from Anheuser-Busch. And then a guy who wrote for the Des Moines Register, he's subsequently been fired, even though he basically did what they told him to do and all of his research for this, and they agreed to publish his article. So wrote a profile for him in the Des Moines Register where he had, during his research on Mr. King, he came across, the writer's name is Aaron Calvin. Calvin came across a bunch of unsavory old tweets that Carson King wrote when he was in high school. He mentioned these to him, and what seems to be the case is that Carson King seemed to recognize that this was going to be run in the article. He probably tried to get out ahead of the story, so he had a press conference apologizing for these tweets. He was, someone pointed out to me that I got the timeline of this a bit wrong in my article, that he was dropped by Anheuser-Busch shortly before his press conference. So basically, this is kind of another example of what people have come to call cancel culture, which is the idea that someone, or also there's a phrase known as milkshake ducking, which is, you can click the link in the article to find the explanation for that. But it's basically a phrase for when a person comes to prominence for something good and wonderful, that people then go and unearth unsavory things that those people have said to tear them down immediately after that we've built them up. So that's basically what ended up happening with the Des Moines Register research into that. And while Venmo and Anheuser-Busch have promised to still match those funds, it was basically just another example of someone being taken down over apparently offensive tweets that he wrote while in high school. And the end result was a bunch of people wrote into the Des Moines Register, were very unhappy with that. And then the guy who wrote the article and that then was kind of hoisted on his own petard, where he ended up being essentially fired after people discovered unsavory tweets of his own.
So that's the whole other layer to this. First of all, what was the nature of the 16-year-old King's tweets?
Yeah, I don't actually remember. I'm sort of philosophically opposed to looking that back up. I know I read it at the time. I think it had something to do with quoting from a TV show that was popular at the time. But as I say, I'm kind of philosophically opposed to looking that up. I just think it was never really something that should have been brought to my attention in the first place. So if I've forgotten it, I don't really want to relearn what it was.
All right, so you mentioned the cancel culture. The context for this is enormous. It appears as though journalists do spend a lot of time, if someone is getting their 15 minutes of fame, or if they are famous, basically curating their old social media all the way back to the foundations of Twitter and Facebook, which can be done. That strikes me as not exactly the task of journalists. They shouldn't be spending their time researching everybody's social media past just to make a story out of it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, according to Aaron Calvin, he was basically following the procedures and protocol of writing for the Des Moines Register. And I can understand how you maybe want to have a little bit of research into people, in particular, you know, in a case like this, where if you have some guy who's raising a bunch of money, it's probably worth looking into, you know, does this guy seem like a stand-up character where you can trust him when he says that he's, you know, donating all of this money? Or are there any kind of red flags that would make you want to let the public know, hey, maybe this is not the guy that you want to donate to? That obviously wasn't the case here. But yeah, this has become a big problem in our culture. And I think I used this term in the article, righteousness coveting, which is a phrase I sort of made up. But you get kind of the general idea that I think this is often what motivates this in people is people, we don't like when other people are being held up as exemplary oftentimes. At least there's always a part of us that doesn't like it because we want to be the one who's praised. We want to be seen as the one who's righteous and good. And when we feel like other people have a pretty big leg up on us in that category of amassing righteousness, one of the things that we oftentimes tend to do is we try and kind of balance the scales by tearing people down. And so cancel culture, I think, has become a big part of this, where people just simply want to tear down people who are making other people feel good, other people who are accomplishing great things. And so one of the easiest ways to do that is to comb through their social media and to let the world know, oh, actually, this person that you all think is great is not really a great person, so that we don't have to feel like we're lower by comparison.
You also talk about rage mongering. What is that?
Yeah, well, I've written about this before too, about kind of the idea of internet outrage as being sort of a form of addiction. And there is something to this where there is, it's what's called a process addiction, where your body, your brain gets used to, you train your brain to release chemicals that make you feel good by engaging in certain activities. So any number of activities that aren't necessarily chemical addictions can be process addictions. So this is kind of how sex addiction becomes a problem. And rage and anger, actually, it does legitimately fall under this category, where people's brains get trained to not release the feel-good chemicals until you're having some sort of outburst and fit of rage against someone. And social media, for quite a while, Twitter in particular, has really been kind of fanning the flames of this, where it works very much like an addictive pattern of behavior, where you wake up, you log onto the internet, you log onto your social media feed, and you look for the person you're supposed to be mad at and the person you're supposed to scream at for that day. And then you have your outburst of rage, and then you kind of go on, and then the next day you're looking for the new hit. This is why these kind of outrage cycles don't last very long. That was why I often joke, and even though it's not really a joke, that if you ever find yourself in the crosshairs of the social media mobs, just log off for a couple of days and wait for a couple of days, and somebody will shoot a giraffe in the face, and then you'll be fine after that, and the mob will have moved on. So this is a big, there's a lot of money and a lot of clicks to be had in rage mongering and in trying to identify for people, this is the person that we're all going to hate today. And it didn't work very well in this instance. A lot of people came to Carson King's defense. But you can understand why it is that the people at the Des Moines Register, as despicable as it was to publish this stuff, you can understand why they thought it would work, because there's a lot of money and a lot of notoriety and a lot of advertising dollars to sell through mongering rage.
The other element to this that seems to have kind of pushed beyond where this kind of social media phenomenon usually goes is we're now going back to the guy's teen years. He barely able to drive when he posted whatever it was he posted. And we simply don't expect that kind of self-control from teenagers, even nowadays as we elevate them to saintly status at the UN.
Right. Yeah, there's, and we all know this. I mean, we all know, looking at our own lives, who we were and the kind of the lack of impulse control and the desire to just rely on kind of shock humor. That's especially prevalent in boys, I think. And we all know who it is that we were when we were younger, and we all wouldn't want this standard applied to ourselves. So it's very odd that people don't seem to have any problem applying this to other people. And of course, this article ended up being a great example of the folly of that, you know, and that the guy who wrote the article ended up, you know, basically losing his job over offensive tweets of his own. So I think there's a real problem in this, in that we're setting up these unrealistic standards and expectations for people from their teenage years, expectations that we know we certainly didn't fulfill. And yet we set those up in large part because we just want to have something to tear people down and make ourselves feel better when we sort of have these, you know, kind of outbursts of rage at people.
It occurs to me that the backlash against the cancel culture in the case of Carson King can itself morph into more cancel culture. Are you concerned about that?
Oh, yeah, very much. And I think this article was a good example of this, where Aaron Calvin ended up losing his job on account of it, which really, to me, it was just a great example of his editors not only failing him and failing Carson King, but just really despicably passing the buck on to someone else. So they were the ones who made the ultimate decision that these tweets were newsworthy. They were the ones who made that choice. And to then turn around and to can this guy, this young writer, because he was doing essentially what it is that they asked him to do, I find to be rather despicable. And likewise, I think there tends to be a bit of tribalism within cancel culture. So someone starts getting criticized for typically anti-woke tweets and anti-progressive tweets, and whether or not they are genuinely offensive, whether or not they just don't kind of fit the, you know, the politically correct orthodoxy of the day. Those of us who are opposed to that kind of stuff and are opposed to this sort of progressive dogma, it can be really tempting for us to kind of want to get our own scalps when we find that people on the other side have also been guilty of these things. And I think that's certainly a temptation that we really need to avoid. We want to have really kind of clear, consistent guidelines on this, that we just simply say the stuff that people tweeted when they were 16 years old isn't newsworthy. It's not stuff that we want to use to ruin their lives. It's not stuff we would have wanted done to us. So regardless of which side of the aisle they're on politically or culturally speaking, this is not a habit that we want to pick up, and it's not going to end well for anyone if we can't just all learn to be a bit more gracious and a bit more merciful with people.
With that said, you say that this story shows that cancel culture is profoundly merciless. You write, it can be tempting for those of us who want to be people of mercy to defend the likes of King. However, in our zeal to be good neighbors, we should be cautious about how we speak about forgiveness when addressing these situations. What do you mean by that, Hans?
Yeah, so this tends to happen. This is the way that people oftentimes will speak in response to this stuff, where I think it's coming from a very good and pure place where people want to come to the aid of someone who's being unfairly picked on. But when people will say, well, we need to be merciful people, we need to forgive Carson King. There was an example of another brewery that promised to, also take part in this and being donating to this and was trying to basically be kind to Carson King and all of this. But they said in their official statement on Twitter, we accept your apology. And that to me is a huge part of the problem, because he didn't owe them an apology. He didn't sin against them. He sinned against God, and he sinned against whoever it is, whatever people he was speaking against in his unsavory tweets. But to act as though we have an obligation to forgive someone who hasn't sinned against us is to claim that we have some sort of authority to judge them. So to say we should use our power for mercy rather than for condemnation is only true if we actually have that power. But God hasn't put us in a position of judgment over these people. He hasn't made us their judges. He hasn't made any of us an authority over Carson King or anyone else in situations like this. So what we ought to do in situations like that is we should very much avoid saying that that we need to forgive him, because all that does is legitimize the mob and convince the mob that we must have some kind of authority over him, or that he owes something to us, that he owes us an apology, that he needs to be groveling at our feet, none of which is true. He doesn't owe us anything. We, as good neighbors, we have a responsibility, if he needs forgiveness, to point him to where he can find it in the blood of Christ. And we have a responsibility to encourage those whom he has sinned against to forgive him and to be at peace with him. But we have absolutely no responsibility to forgive him, because he's not in our debt in any way.
It's really a kind of a perverse phenomenon, if you stop and think about it, that it is this merciless castigating of individuals by kind of the faceless social media, demanding apologies, which are almost immediately given in the most extreme terms possible, and then essentially seeking forgiveness from the mob. To me, it just strikes me as emotional, spiritual extortion.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true. And the odd thing about this is that we wouldn't do this in most other aspects of our life, you know. So I give an example in the piece, you know, as kind of a form of an analogy or point of comparison. But, you know, you can see this in any number of ways. So if you're in a grocery store and you start getting into an argument with your wife and you say something insulting to your wife, if the clerk looked at you and said, you know, you really should apologize to me, you would just say, no, I'll apologize to my wife, but this doesn't have anything to do with you. I don't owe you anything. So we would do that in all other aspects of life. But for some odd reason, when it comes to online social media stuff, when it comes to especially these kind of anti-progressive, anti-woke transgressions, people develop this very strange mindset that you're somehow indebted to the mob and you have a responsibility to apologize to the mob and to prove to the mob that you deserve to have a place in society. And this is just a toxic narcissism in us, when we have the audacity to believe that people we've never met, people who have never said a single word to us, people who have never done anything to harm us whatsoever, that they somehow owe us an apology as though we're God.
Finally, why does the Des Moines Register in fact owe Carson King an apology?
Because it was nobody's business what he tweeted when he was 16 years old. It had absolutely nothing to do with the story. It had nothing to do with this great act of charity that he was doing and this great act of philanthropy by raising all of this money for kids who were suffering from cancer and a host of other diseases. There was absolutely no benefit to it whatsoever. This is really goes back to what Luther talks about in his large catechism on the Eighth Commandment, and where he basically says, if you haven't been put in a position of judgment upon someone, if someone isn't under your care, then you bury their sins and you don't air them before the world. If you see your neighbor sinning, you don't go out and tell the entire world about it, but you cover up that sin so that his reputation is preserved. And that's precisely what it is that they should have done.
Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column there titled Carson King Doesn't Need Our Forgiveness, but the Des Moines Register Owes Him an Apology. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Hans, thanks.
My pleasure.
We'll be playing Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week on the other side of the break. We've got our four soundbites lined up. We're going to play them for you. Then your vote will decide which will be soundbite of the week.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
This is Pastor Donald Jordan welcoming you to Redeemer Evangelical Lutheran Church in Chico, California. We stand upon the inspired, inerrant Word of God and preach Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Students at Chico State and Butte College are welcome to our college group. Our divine service is at 10 and Sunday school at 9. We are located at 750 Moss Avenue, and our website is redeemerchico.org.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. John's Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Trinity Lutheran, San Dimas, California. Emmaus Lutheran, South Bend, Indiana. St. Paul Lutheran, Munster, Indiana. Faith Lutheran, Waterloo, Iowa. Grace Lutheran, Wichita, Kansas. St. John Lutheran, Port Sanilac, Michigan. Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. St. Paul's Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Calvary Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. And St. Athanasius Lutheran, Vienna, Virginia. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.